The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPont.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. July was the hottest month ever recorded, and temperatures are continuing to rise because of man-made climate change. Global warming is real, and the window to do something about it is closing soon. The city of San Antonio is proposing a climate action and adaptation plan to do its part, and that plan has been adapted. What does it look like now, and what can it do? How can it accomplish these goals? We're joined by Mayor Ron Nuremberg to talk about the climate action and adaptation plan. We'll also be joined by Ana Sandoval, city council member for District 7. Our phone lines are open, 210-614-8 980, and you can email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. So, Ron, Mayor Nuremberg, welcome back to The Source.
Great to be with you, Dave. Thanks for having me.
So, we have a climate action plan that's gone through some adaptations along the way. Sure. So, what do we have now?
So, we are about to release, Thursday, the Climate Action Adaptation Plan, the revised draft that has gone through extensive public input here over the last few months, which is a framework for the city of San Antonio to do its part to deal with a global climate crisis that's happening, that's having a dramatic effect on ecological systems, on human health, on infrastructure, even on national security. And it's a framework that helps us lay out a process by which we'll take action to gain a compliance with the Paris Accords that we agreed are our North Star in this process in 2017. It's a framework that allows us to take aggressive action to meet those standards over the next 30 years.
Now, let's talk a little bit about this process. So you guys have crafted a proposal, and that proposal is going to go to the city council, and then they will have opportunities to make changes also.
That's right. We've had technical working groups, which are comprised of experts in climate science, practitioners, community members, organizers, environmental justice folks, businesses, industries, everyone collaborating to create this plan that, again, is compliant with the Paris standards. And so it is now in draft form. It's gone through another round of revisions, and it's been there's a few folks that have it, including our steering committee that's been charged with creating this plan, and it's a strong one, and I'm very proud of it because again, it is an aggressive plan that allows us to meet the 1.5 degree goal that scientists view as the standard by which we need to be operating. And so it'll go before City Council in October for ratification. At that point, implementation begins, and that's really where the hard work starts.
But the council, they could take the plan and they could say it doesn't go far enough, or it could say it goes too far. There's still, things could happen on the dais, right?
There's always that possibility, but what I'll say is that this is a community-wide collaboration. The goal itself has not moved. The goal hasn't changed from what we started with in 2017, which is, again, carbon neutrality for the city of San Antonio by 2050. That's not a movable goal. That's our target because that's what we have committed to as global communities are important to meet the standards and again, mitigate the impact of human-made climate change to protect human health, national security, industry, and so forth.
But, there was in the previous plan that we saw, there were some specific commitments to cutting emissions and from the CPS energy power plants, also talk about carbon-free vehicles in San Antonio roads by 2050, and all these really specific things. And those things have kind of been, are they taken out?
See, I would argue that they have not been taken out. In fact, the language has changed a little bit because this started as a framework. It will continue to be a framework because a lot of the things that are in there, we're dependent on innovation. There's technologies that will be needed for us to move towards our goals that, frankly, the city council doesn't have the power, for instance, to create new electric vehicles. We're going to depend on the market innovations to produce those, and then we'll adopt them when they're available. But those goals are still in there. Again, the most important one being carbon neutrality by 2050. There are benchmarks along the way, including the more renewables into the CPS energy portfolio. But all of this is a framework, and we lay out a process by which we will examine the available technologies, the available innovations, the cost-benefit analyses that we have to go through, and the public input that's required, eventually to take action each step of the way along the 30 years that's required in this plan.
This is the kind of thing that doesn't ever really please everybody. It pleases few people. Either there are people who say it goes too far, that this is a burden on the business community, and we have people who are really paying attention and who think that we're not doing enough, that we have to be serious and take urgent, direct, serious action to deal with climate change. And so basically, I mean, this is a hard thing to sell.
Well, it is. I mean, and especially here we are, you know, in the backyard of the Eagle Ford Shale, and we are going to ratify a climate action adaptation plan that commits ourselves to action to create a city of San Antonio that's doing its part in compliance with all the global communities in the Paris Accords to reach carbon neutrality by 2050. This is a big lift for a community that is diverse, that has a lot of diverse interests, that has, again, competing interests in many cases. But we are serious about this, and that's why we're taking the time and effort necessary to draft a plan and ratify the framework that is necessary for action in the next 30 years. The challenge is that, you know, a lot of what is required over the next 30 years from this community deals with technology and innovation in which cost estimates and deadlines may vary drastically from the plan as the technologies improve or we approach the actual implementation of some of these actual policies and strategies. This is a springboard, almost like a table of contents for what's to come in San Antonio to address climate change, and to get everyone on board to start out the right way is a big lift. But keep in mind, this is just the start. The action that we have to take over the next, again, 30 years to achieve compliance and get to carbon neutrality by 2050 is going to be significant. It's going to be difficult, and we have to make sure that we have a framework, a process in place to make this change happen because it's necessary.
So it's not the climate framework and adaptation plan. It's the climate action. And so what's the action? What actionable things are in this plan?
So there's a lot of things that we're doing that we will embark on immediately. For the city of San Antonio, what's currently in our jurisdiction, some things that I'll note that we're going to be doing and are committing to. For instance, all of our fleet passenger vehicles and small trucks in our fleet, in the COSA fleet, we're going to be prioritizing electrification and moving to more efficient options by 2025. We are converting all the City of San Antonio streetlights, for instance, to LEDs. We're currently at 61%, but we have a goal to get to 100% by 2021. We have a goal for zero net energy of all City of San Antonio buildings by 2040. And then, of course, the most significant one that is a huge part of climate action is passing a multimodal transportation plan to reduce emissions and make it more efficient to move around San Antonio.
And still people are pointing to the fact that CPS Energy, which is a municipally owned energy utility, will continue to burn coal for the foreseeable future. So we're going to talk more about that and why that's a big deal and what people need to understand about that. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. Mayor Ron Nuremberg in the studio. We're going to be joined by Ana Sandoval in just a moment. This is The Source from Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about San Antonio's Climate Action and Adaptation Plan. It goes to the City Council for discussion on Thursday. What do you think about it? What should San Antonio be doing to limit its carbon emissions? What's available? What's possible? Are we doing enough? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Mayor Ron Nuremberg, Mayor of San Antonio, is with us in the studio. We're now joined by Ana Sandoval, District 7 representative for the City of San Antonio. And so let me go to a caller. The number is 210-614-8980. Elizabeth. And Elizabeth, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good morning, David. I can't believe I'm first in line, but thanks. And thanks to Mayor Nuremberg and also Councilwoman Sandoval for all that they do for San Antonio. I would like to address the economic impact because everything boils down to the bottom line of the dollar. I don't think our efforts to move this along quickly are too fast because the glacial ice is melting much faster than even scientists predicted. We know that coastal rise is going to be up to 23 feet as a result in a few decades, and yet we're building all these plants on the coast. And then there's the tourism aspect in San Antonio. We may not be affected by coastal rise, but tourism is a big industry, and if temperatures continue to rise, how is that going to impact the attractiveness of San Antonio, which gets much hotter than many places, to tourists that are looking at planning conventions or to coming down to San Antonio for vacation when they can't even bear walking along the river?
All right. Thank you, Sister Elizabeth. I appreciate you calling in with that question. So let me hear from both our guests. Mayor Nuremberg, talk about the economic challenges of doing nothing, inaction.
Yeah, well, we know that there are dramatic costs to human health, and those obviously are also economic costs to the City of San Antonio and to communities in general. But there's also loss of infrastructure and services that we deal with regard to climate change. And we know that heat waves are getting harder and more frequent, as are flooding events and extreme storms. Need only look at the storms that blew through here in June that hit a lot of the San Antonio neighborhoods pretty hard, and the infrastructure and dollar loss that occurred with that. Hardening our infrastructure and services is one aspect of cost avoidance, but also there's great opportunity here for San Antonio and for communities that greener and embrace the new energy economy. San Antonio, for instance, is a top solar producer in the South, and that has created thousands of jobs and billions of dollars of economic impact since we started towards that path over 10 years ago. So there's great opportunity here in terms of economics, but there's a severe amount of economic loss that we can avoid if we're proactive with our climate strategies.
And Councilmember Sandoval, or the caller, talks about San Antonio's getting hotter and hotter. We're feeling that today. It's going to be 102 degrees, and we're having more and more of these days that are over 100. And the science tells us we're going to have lots of these days into the future. So this is not a good thing, I don't think.
No, you're absolutely right. So in the worst case scenario that was projected for the City of San Antonio, we would be seeing over 100 days of temperatures above 100 degree Fahrenheit. So that's nearly a third of our year. That means kids not being able to go out and play in the parks that we've all invested so many tax dollars in. That means tourists very unlikely to visit attractions, like Sister Elizabeth said, attractions like SeaWorld, like Fiesta Texas or Six Flags, like the Riverwalk. But also, what does it mean to our military that's conducting basic training here? Will this still be a preferred place for basic training for our armed services if we can't maintain our temperatures?
And the question there is that will they be able to train effectively outside in the heat, or is it the lift? Because there's a question about when it gets so hot, planes can't even take off. And so big planes like the C-5s, there's questions about, will that even be available?
That's right. At over 120 degrees or so, that becomes a problem for planes, and not just military missions, but for all of our commercial and tourism activity throughout the world. So these are real challenges that we need to do what we can to avoid the worst impacts. And if we act as other cities are, other cities that aren't will follow, will be able to drive the economy just by saying that we're looking to buy an electric fleet. That sends a signal to the market that there will be a market that's ready to buy that stuff. Without us making these commitments, those motions may not happen.
I'm going to go to our voicemail line, and this is Cindy.
Hi, my name is Cindy, and yes, I'm very concerned about the global crisis situation, and I do support the city taking action in an efficient, reasonable manner. Would also like to know if the city has an understanding of how the oil and gas activities of the Eagleford flaring, Eagleford development affects our air quality, since it is south of us.
All right, so Mayor Ron Nirenberg, the flaring that goes on in the Eagle Ford Shale or Ana Sandoval,
I'll go ahead and speak to that.
So the flaring is, you know, they have this excess natural gas that's produced by these wells. Mm-hmm. There's not the infrastructure in place to capture or pipe that oil, that gas, so it can be used, and so it's just cheaper for them to flare it off. Sometimes the flaring is done properly where it's cleanly burnt, and other times it's not. It's dirty and it's actually creating more contaminants and greenhouse gases than we should allow.
Correct. So fracking, which is still a somewhat new industry, has been so new that it's been very difficult for government to keep up in terms of regulations. There have been some studies done that demonstrate that not just the flaring, but the leakage from these activities are contributing more greenhouse gases on a regular basis than what happened in the El Viso Canyon natural or disaster that we saw in California when there was a huge leak for a long time. So that's really frightening. We think of natural gas as a transition fuel, and it can be when it's used wisely and carefully. Letting that stuff leak is really like letting water leak, right? It's draining a natural resource that we have. So that's why I've spoken with CPS, and I have encouraged them to find ways to sustainably source natural gas. In other words, can they buy their natural gas from suppliers that follow best practices and leak as little as possible? So that's something that we're looking to CPS to help us with.
Another caller, 210-614-8980. We'll go to Lee. And hi, Lee. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I love your program.
Thank you.
It's so wonderful. I live out in Comal County. I live in a little place called Spring Branch, which is 35 miles from where I was working in San Antonio on Medical Drive. And every day I would drive 35 miles there and 35 miles back in my really awful old car that was leaking all sorts of pollutants into the air. And there is no mass transit out here. They built a 281 bus depot, which is very nice, except that I'd have to walk 16 miles to get to the bus depot. So I think, you know, first of all, what we do need is more mass transit outside the borders of Bexar County, because a lot of people are driving into San Antonio, into Bernie, into New Braunfels, and the roads are impossible. You know, it's just traffic jams one way and the other.
All right, Lee, thank you for that. So Mayor Ron Nirenberg just tees you up nicely to talk about some sort of mass transit plan. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, well, we've been thinking about it for over a generation, Lee, so I appreciate your question. And I would say that we are now on the precipice of action that we've never dared to take in a generation in terms of mass transit. I would say it's not just an outside of Bexar County issue, it's an inside Bexar County issue as well, because we know that the growth has made congestion worse, which creates more emissions on our roadways internally. So we're gearing up for the completion and delivery of a ConnectSA multimodal transportation plan for inside San Antonio that would connect our communities with multiple modes of transportation, including advanced rapid transit and lower emissions options, including a better bus network. But also there's great conversation happening at the Metropolitan Planning Organization, where there's a group of regional stakeholders and elected officials, including Councilwoman Sandoval, discussing how we connect our regional corridor in a more efficient and more sustainable manner. And, you know, part of our strategy from where I'm sitting as a mayor of a large metropolitan is that we want to have people on those bodies that can move the conversation into a direction that's not just about moving cars quickly, but is also about moving people and moving people in a more efficient and environmentally sensitive manner. So having Councilwoman Sandoval there, as well as our colleagues on the city council, advance that perspective is critically important.
And I got an email from a listener. This is a talking point that you see sometimes. It says, climate change is happening, but it's always happening. Climate is always changing, and that there's no need to get all worked up about climate change because, you know, that's what climates do. Ana Sandoval, what do you say to people who have that view?
So I guess that's what some people might say is a denier's view of man-driven climate change.
Or catastrophic.
Climate change. So the person is right. The climate is always changing. But the natural cycles for climate are really more along the scale of 11,000 years at a time when we see a significant change. What we're seeing right now and have seen since the Industrial Revolution is faster than anything we've seen in the past hundreds of thousands of years for which we have records for. So we do need to be cognizant of that. So it's at a different pace. And we've evolved to live in this type of climate that we have today. The question is, how quickly can we evolve to live in the climate that we're throwing ourselves into?
Well, I mean, as a society, as a civilization, is that what you mean? Because we have sea level rise, and you have erratic temperatures, we have, agriculture, that we have climate zones that we're accustomed to. Those things get manipulated, changed, thrown off, and we have to figure out, you know, how are we going to move forward doing that, and it's going to be a bumpy ride.
No, absolutely. So even if you believe that the climate is always changing, you can see the evidence that we do have, like you said, sea level rise, bigger storms. So we need to be prepared for that. I think the mayor and I would be doing a disservice to our community if we weren't planning for that future. We don't want those catastrophic economic impacts here.
And so, Mayor Ron Nirenberg, how do you talk to someone who has not accepted the reality that climate change is real and we're dealing with a very significant problem that will disrupt Western civilization?
Well, I think the science is beyond dispute at this point. I mean, the evidence is very clear that man-made actions are having a dramatic impact on the environment around us. But the hope there is that not only are we working to build our infrastructure in a more resilient way that keeps your home from being flooded when the sea levels do rise, but also that human interaction has shown time and again that when we see global challenges, when we act as a global community, we can make a difference. I mean, you don't have to go that far back when the global challenge was the issues in the atmospheric ozone, and the fight was on against chlorofluorocarbons. And the cities around the country worked together to find a more sustainable way, and we've dealt with that.
As did the federal government under the Reagan administration.
That's right. It's a partnership between state, federal, and local governments. And so the same can be true here. And we know that, when we lower emissions, when we lower greenhouse gas emissions and the ground level ozone is reduced, we can have a positive impact on these levels. And that is what was at stake at the Paris climate meetings, was that we wanted to find a standard that global communities could commit to with action. And that's where we are now. And our action is based on the 1.5 degrees Celsius standard that global communities realize will have a dramatic positive impact on the communities that we serve over the long haul.
So we're talking about San Antonio's Climate Action and Adaptation Plan. It goes to the City Council this week. What do you think about this plan, this proposal? What questions do you have about the newest version? Do you think climate change can be addressed on the local level? And what is your greatest fear about our changing environment? What do you want to see happening moving forward. You can call in. We got a full board here. We're going to get people on the air as soon as we come back from this break, but you can also call in 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the City of San Antonio's Climate Action and Adaptation Plan. It goes to City Council for a hearing this week. They will discuss it. What do you think about the plan? What do you think about climate action? What can San Antonio do? What should the world be doing? 210-614-8980. A comment from Stephen on Twitter. The development community needs to know that implementing the cap is a benefit for business and not a loss of opportunity or jobs. Since developers have such influence, are there efforts to educate business and convince them business as usual is not an option? So, Mayor Ron Nuremberg, how have you reached out to the business community? Are they open to talking about this? Do they see that there needs to be change?
You know, I think that, yes, we've reached out. We have been reaching out to the community at large, including industries, especially those industries that most immediately impacted, for the better part of a year and a half since this plan was started to come together. But certainly it's been intensified over the last 6 months since we've had another round of revisions and the first draft was released. It's a mixed bag, like there is with, you know, the average citizen on the street about, you know, the acceptance of the plan. I think most people kind of have loosely understood climate change, and there are things happening out in the world with regard to action on it. But, you know, when it gets down to the brass tacks about how does this affect me and how does this affect the business bottom line, I think that, you know, what you're seeing is that the forward-thinking businesses already know that this is a reality. They're seeing opportunities. Many of them are seeing opportunities about how to adapt to the new environment, how to adapt to the new reality, and find their own ways of, you know, achieving some success through it. So it is a mixed bag, but our life as policymakers is to make sure that we're first and foremost protecting our community's well-being, and that's why we're continuing to drive forward. But I think more people are coming along and seeing the benefit of this as we move through towards ratification.
All right, let's go to the phones, 210-614-8980 with Russell. And Russell, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, Mayor, thank you very much for supporting the climate plan. But my concern is you've already been talking about CPS, about the coal plants. And is there going to be a structural change at CPS to get the implementation moving forward? Right now, all City Council can do is select board members and approve rates.
All right, Russell, thank you for that. And Ron Nuremberg, you're a board member, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And the mayor of San Antonio is an ex officio member of the CPS Board of Trustees. And that's by design because CPS is a publicly owned energy utility and public policy needs to drive the agenda at CPS Energy. You know, I wish it were as easy as us saying that climate change is important and then we're going to go embark on an effort to deal with it. But the realities are there's a tremendous amount of economic issues with regard to CPS that we need to be concerned about, including the portfolio itself and the investments made into it. But in terms of how CPS will react and deal with and implement this plan, it will be driven by the conversations in the community and through City Council ratifying this plan. They've developed a framework as well for the new energy strategies moving forward over the next 30, 40 years. And we're going to be working with that to make sure that it is as aggressive as possible to achieve the compliance with the Paris Accords and what we're setting out here in the Climate Action Adaptation Plan.
So District 7 City Councilperson Ana Sandoval, we've got to get you on this issue as well. The CPS Energy, city-owned utility, Other cities have committed to going coal-free. And you talk about their portfolio and these other issues that involve the CPS Energy. I know it's their responsibility to provide cheap, reliable energy. That's numero uno. But also, you know, could they actually be pressured to speed it up and get off of coal, Ana Sandoval?
Well, that's a very important question, not just coal, but even what we were talking about in terms of clean sourcing natural gas. Coal, I was just talking to someone about this on the way over here. Coal is one of the dirtiest fuels, but it did build America, so we rely on it a lot, heavily, across the country and here in San Antonio. So it will be up to CPS at the bidding of the community and at the bidding of the council to innovate and to learn from other examples. How can we transition to a cleaner energy future and keep reliability and affordability for our community? You know, this is a global problem, and San Antonio can't turn its back on a global problem. I don't believe that it's impossible. I don't think it's easy. Certainly don't think it's easy. But we, the mayor and I, and I'm sure many members of the community, are willing to work with CPS to advance this cause.
Is there a role for public pressure on trying to get involved in this? I mean, we just say, oh, it's a municipally owned utility, but, you know, we can only do so much. I mean, if people really started marching in the streets and screaming and hollering, or they filed some sort of petition to change the charter that we would be off of coal, I mean, would that make a difference?
The citizens of San Antonio, the ratepayers of San Antonio, own their energy utility. That's the great strength, is that we can see the desires of the community reflected in the actions of their two public utilities. And one of those that is just now gaining steam is the fact that we want to build a more resilient and climate active San Antonio. And so I think you'll start to see this unfold. Do we know what it's going to look like in 25 years from now, or even 10 years from now? We don't know, but there is absolutely a role for public input. And that's something that CPS is actually beginning to embrace more and more, is public input on how these decisions are made. The script is not written about what CPS's long-term energy portfolio looks like, but I can tell you very confidently that conversation, how it unfolds, is going to be happening in people's living rooms right now as it relates to climate action adaptation.
Another voicemail. This is from Linda.
Hi, this is Linda. 20,000 years ago, a 2-mile-thick glacier covered the Great Lakes. It's warmed, and climate changes. Continents shift, and shorelines change. We need to stop blaming each other and frightening our children. We need to take logical steps. We learn to adapt. Thank you.
All right, Linda. And so let's go to Mayor Ron Nuremberg. Can you react to that voicemail?
Well, I think that's a good point. We're not here to scare anybody, but, you know, I think that if we lull ourselves into thinking that climate action and adaptation is just going to happen because the market is going to demand it, I think we're fooling ourselves. I mean, there are great actions that need to take place and will take place because of innovation and the market seeing opportunity. But there is a role for public policy to drive that agenda, and it starts with measuring the impact on human health and human safety and security that is happening because of man-made climate change. And that's the difference here, is that you have policymakers and communities all across the world that have banded together and saying that we've got to push this along or it's not going to happen fast enough. And that's what we're committed to doing here in San Antonio.
Bill is on the phone. And Bill, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm just wondering what sort of financial incentives the city could give homeowners and property owners to retain and plant trees, as they do play a major part in, you know, carbon sequestration. See too many big trees cut down. It'd be nice to see maybe a tax break.
All right. Trees are a great way to take carbon out of the air, but they also help the cooling effect for San Antonio. What are we doing to help promote trees?
Today, I'll go ahead and start. Today, we do have something called a tree mitigation fund. It's money that's collected from developers when they are unable to maintain some of the trees on the lot, and that money goes directly to replace those trees and plant more trees. So those are available. In terms of having an additional incentive, that this phase of the planning process doesn't get into the specifics on new incentives, but that can be considered once the plan is adopted. This is, as the mayor said earlier, the framework, the starting point, and it's got a list of items we will explore in detail. But I thank the caller for his suggestion. And
so we have a city forester and a city arborist. Their job is to look at our tree canopy and keep it healthy. Ron Nuremberg, what's the state of the trees in San Antonio? They're hot. Thirsty.
Yeah, it's tenuous, I will tell you, because we know for many reasons, not just climate adaptation and action, that trees are important for communities, public health, but also property values. They're beautiful. So we've had a tree ordinance in effect for a number of years. There is a disincentive for large-scale developers to remove large trees, but I'll be candid with you. Those kinds of ordinances are constantly under attack at the state legislature. And so what we're trying to do is make sure that we maintain the protections that we have for the trees that are here today, and we prevent the clear cutting that we're seeing all too often. You see it almost on a monthly basis now. But we've got to protect those things. But the caller speaks to something that's critically important for understanding this plan as a whole. It is a framework. There's a lot of things in there that we see as important to the climate strategy overall. One of them is tree canopy. But it allows for actions to be taken in the interim. The incentive idea about potentially offering homeowners incentive for keeping trees is an interesting idea. When we have a process in place in this plan to discuss that and potentially lay something out that could be considered in the future. But all of these different strategies, there should be a platform for action to spring from, and that's what this framework provides.
So an email from Alan: what can we do to mitigate the heat island effect? I guess trees is a way to bring that about. You know, the trees are a way to create more shade. They do create more cooling. They also freshen the air, and they're great to have around. So plant trees. The number is 210-614-8980. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Mayor Ron Nuremberg and Ana Sandoval, District 7 City Council. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, Ron Nuremberg, Mayor of San Antonio, in the studio. Ana Sandoval here as well, District 7 City Council member. We're talking about the Climate Action and Adaptation Plan. The number to call in with your questions and comments, 210-614-8980. Are you into this, or you think maybe not? 210-614-8980. Val is on the line. Val, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for the program, and thank you to the mayor and the council member who have been working hard on this issue. It's a very important issue, and I don't even say climate change. I say climate emergency because the time is short for us to respond well. My questions today, however, are on a part of it that I'm not sure are in the cap, and that is in regard to plastics, especially the urgent amount of microplastics that are found throughout our environment, including in the rain and in all the animals and even in newborns or fetuses. I don't think this is safe, and it leads me to wonder about what we can do in a state that, as the mayor said, is hostile to even like a bag ban. And the other question is recycling really happening in San Antonio in terms of plastics? What's happening with our plastics since the many countries have started refusing to receive them?
Val, thank you for that. So let me go to Ana Sandoval from District 7. You brought your water with you in a reusable water container, and then congratulate you on that.
I'm conserving, Dave. I don't have water at all.
It tastes better that way.
Yeah. So there's so much plastic that we use on a daily basis. What are we doing on that?
Sure. So first, I want to thank the caller for referring to this as a climate emergency. Sometimes when we say climate change, it really makes it sound like a slower process than it is. But I've also heard it called a climate instability, and that's what we're facing, right, is that we're unable to predict our climate according to the regular patterns, and that's why we need to be prepared. In terms of plastics, yes, the city is still recycling its plastics. We actually do not export any of our plastics to those other to China.
They won't take it anymore.
Which, exactly, but we didn't before, so we're exporting it out of San Antonio, but to places here domestically. But the caller brings up a really good point, is the use of disposable plastics creating a different type of environmental hazard, which is a health hazard in our fauna and in our animals. But the demand for those plastic products also creates greenhouse gas emissions just by virtue of their manufacturing, right? They're all made by oil products, or petroleum products. So that's why I choose not to use disposable water bottles. Also, there's health impacts associated with that. So what can we do in a place that is averse to even things like plastic bag bans? That's where we're going to have to get creative and figure out how do we make it easier for people to make the right choice, and how do we make it convenient for them?
What are we doing with the term climate equity, addressing these issues in a way that don't burden the most vulnerable part of our economy? So how do we balance all that out, Mayor?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about that, Dave, because this is one of the elements of the San Antonio CAP Climate Action Adaptation Plan that I think is unique among plans nationwide. We've made climate equity a foundational piece, a planning principle in this framework. And that is because exactly what you said, we have great disparities in this community, and by and large, those impacts in climate from the climate crisis are happening most dramatically within the most vulnerable communities. And you got a sense of that loud and clear during the June storms. There was great response in some communities throughout San Antonio, but if you went to some of the most challenged neighborhoods of our community, they were out of power for days. And many of those families we found just sitting on their porch and just waiting it out because the food in their refrigerator had spoiled. They really couldn't get to work. And so they're really in the most vulnerable position when it comes to the effects of climate change. So we are working towards a CAP framework that takes those changes into account and also incentivizes our action to create a more positive impact on the communities that are feeling it the worst.
Well, let me try to link that to the big question that we had about coal and dumping coal in San Antonio and climate equity. So if we do that, we tell CPS Energy, you have got to shut down your coal plant immediately or within, and if that increases the price of electricity 10, 15, 20%, there are people in San Antonio who already have a hard time paying their power bill. Do we have to think about it in terms of those downstream consequences?
Absolutely. Sorry to interrupt, Mayor, but that is the premise of the climate equity framework, is that we must find a way to reduce those emissions without putting extra burden on those who are already burdened. So that what that may look like is that we have home efficiency, energy efficiency audits or improvements for those homes where people are having a hard time paying the bill, or where we find some way to have locally generated, maybe solar panels on that home where they can derive their electricity from it. So having less of a carbon impact, but still keeping them able to have power.
Okay. Now the caller, Mary J. Mary J., welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering what the mayor's stance was on soil conservation, because soil holds carbon, and it has been proven that the depletion of our soils and soil destruction is the number one contributor to carbon released into our atmosphere. So.
All right, Mary J., thank you for that. Soil conservation, there's a lot of talk about how much carbon can be retained in the soil and looking as a possibility.
Sure. I think that's definitely a strategy that we should explore in terms of however possible. In fact, there was an article in the paper over the weekend about managing coastal land and making sure it's there, still absorbing the wetlands and stuff, still absorbing carbon from the atmosphere. So I would say it's definitely on the table.
Another caller, Josh. Hi, Josh. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, this question is for Mayor. This is Josh. I was wondering if there's any way we can help plant trees. I know I have some friends that will be down to help.
All right. So Josh was asking, you know, if they're willing to help plant trees. Having like volunteers, maybe some sort of local action corps, people, like I had in front of my house, at one of these traffic islands. It was like Baja California on that. And I planted trees. I filled it up with trees, and it made all the difference in the world. People can take individual action, take personal responsibility for, you know, a piece of land. My wife was saying, don't plant there. That's the city property. Yeah. And I'm saying, they won't mind. So can people do things like that, Ron?
Yeah, they can. And the councilwoman mentioned the tree mitigation fund and the fact that we have thousands of trees planted every year. And those efforts are largely reliant on volunteer corps to get those things done. And of course, you know, there's many different nonprofit organizations that have carried the baton as well in our tree canopy strategies or any of the other environmental cleanup measures. We have a Basura Bash every single year that relies on volunteers to clean up our waterways. So there's a lot of ways to get involved. And we're going to
Green Space Alliance.
Green Spaces Alliance. I mean, there's many organizations, many nonprofit organizations that have formed over the years that have helped us implement strategies that would be smart in this framework, and that we want those efforts to continue, and we need to continue to infuse them with new community volunteers and efforts.
So if it's just a framework, how can we be sure that this isn't just going to sit on a shelf? How do we know this is actually going to translate into something that's going to reduce San Antonio's carbon footprint?
Vote. Demand it from your elected officials, because that's the challenge. We know that the CAP drafting this plan is just a framework. It's the easy part. It's a starting point. But all the actions that we take over the next 30 years to meet compliance with the Paris Accords and reach carbon neutrality in 2050 will require difficult action to be taken. And they're going to largely be driven by your local elected officials. So vote for people who view this as an important step to the future.
And an email from William: opponents to the CAP say whatever San Antonio does doesn't matter. Cities were just one little dot on the big map. So, you know, it's a global problem. Does it matter what a city does?
It matters when hundreds of cities across the globe together unite behind a goal that we know scientifically will make an impact. So, yes, if the city of San Antonio was in it alone, there's only so much we can do, and it largely our impact would be dispersed. But we have hundreds of communities that have gotten involved in this effort. It's a global issue. It's a global crisis, and there's global commitment behind it. We have to do our part.
And Ana Sandoval?
Absolutely. I've always felt that local government is where most of the impact is. It's where the ideas are generated and they bubble up to the state and to the federal government. Also, regardless, our community will be impacted to some extent by climate change. And again, it would be irresponsible of us as your leaders not to prepare for the community for that. It's our job to protect.
And if San Antonio takes action on this, will it inspire other cities to do so, Mayor Ron Nuremberg, really quick?
I think other cities have been inspired on their own. But I think that when we pass climate action adaptation in the backyard of Eagle Ford Shale, it would send a strong message that other communities like us, which have a lesser of a lift, can do it too. And I hope that that happens.
And Mayor Ron Nirenberg, Mayor of San Antonio, thank you so much for joining us. Ana Sandoval, District 7 City Council, thank you for joining us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director.